Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Pod, pod, pod. How do you like it? How do you like it? Pod, pod, pod. How do you like it? How do you like it? Pod, pod, pod. How do you like it? How do you like it? Ooh, how do you like your pod? Is that too much? Hello and welcome to the latest hot sounds from the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. Cut by the editors of PC Advisor, Tech World, Macworld UK, and Computer World UK. Every Friday we board an audio train, losing our audio tickets, not being able to find an audio seat, putting up with audio delays, and having to take a replacement bus audio service in order to bring you no more, or occasionally slightly more, than 40 minutes of informed chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Please don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I'm David Price, Deputy Editor of Macworld UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by Centre Parting, it's Jim Marching. Martin.
Hello.
Editor of PC Advisor. Hello, Jim. Feeling poorly, it's Tom McCauley.
Hello.
Online editor at These a Week. Online editor of Tech World.
Hi.
And senseless killing spree, it's Tamlin McGee.
Wow.
Online editor of Computer World.
Hello.
This week we are talking MWC, GDS, and robot-related RIP. FAB.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Jim Martin, thank you for joining us here in cold, wintry England, while your colleagues drink cocktails in sunny Barcelona. Other than the excellent food, architecture and cultural life, what is so great about Barcelona and Barcelona this week in particular?
Well, obviously, there's a lot to love about Barcelona, but this week is MWC, which means Mobile World Congress. And that, in turn, means new mobile phones.
Brilliant.
Or as we call them today, smartphones.
Well, now, does everybody call them smartphones?
Actually, they just call them phones. They're just phones, aren't they?
Yeah.
Let's not beat about the bush.
Well,
so,
but this leads us to an immediate point, is that there was a phone announced that isn't a smartphone, which is...
That is a very good point, actually. So should we return to the Nokia 3310 relaunch as a dumb phone? Because that is essentially what it is. It is a phone which is, it's been re-released, really. It's not the same as the original. So if you're kind of want to go on that retro trip and have another 3310, you're going to have to buy one off eBay or something, because the new one is bigger. It's not exactly the same, but it doesn't have a touchscreen. It does have a bigger screen, but it is still exactly the same. It's a dumb phone.
Does it have Snake?
It does have Snake, and this is one of the reasons, or the reason, to buy it, I guess. But
can you not get Snake on all
you
other
can
devices?
Get an app. It's just Snakey. I mean, is it Slither.io? How do you say
Slither.io.
It? Slither.io.
I don't know how you say it. But that is far superior to Snake in every respect.
I mean, why would you? The only reason you would want to buy this 50 quid Nokia phone is surely, as a kind of just a joke, as a sort of a retro thing, to be holding and using, using a retro phone which essentially just makes calls and sends text, and obviously you can play Snake. There's nothing else about it. It's a 2G phone. It technically has a web browser, but you're not going to do any web browsing on it. People are saying, oh, you should buy it as a backup phone for going to festivals and stuff. But, you know, you can buy a cheap Android phone for 50 quid.
I think you could get a lot cheaper than 50 quid, something that's similar, a burner phone. People are obviously going for the specific retro look, the cachet of this particular model, which I don't know if we already said, it was launched in 2000. So 17-year-old tech, and this is an industry where it's always year after year, minor upgrades we get very excited about, and for some reason we're now buying a 17-year-old phone with some updates, but as you said, not a touchscreen, which seems odd.
But the ridiculous thing is we're talking about it and it is completely overshadowing the fact that Nokia has announced three new, or some new, Android phones. So Nokia's back, yes, the brand, but it's now making Android phones.
Hasn't it? It's been sort of bought out then, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been bought out. The trouble is, Nokia dropped the ball a long time ago. They tried to launch some tablets. I don't think they didn't really come to the UK as far as I know. That was Android as well. And now, of course, they've got the Android phones. But they're now competing with Samsung and all the other big Android manufacturers.
Yeah, but they've got Android on Nokia. This pretty much leaves nobody left who hasn't gone for Android except Apple.
Pretty much, yes.
Got BlackBerry as well.
Well, that is another one, isn't it? BlackBerry, the new Key One, which is another Android phone, but this time with a proper physical keyboard. If you want a BlackBerry, if you love that solid BlackBerry feel and you want a physical keyboard, it seems that the Key One is going to be the one to buy this year, the Android phone with a physical keyboard.
Do people want physical keyboards? I still find this really hard to understand.
I think the answer is pretty much no.
I mean, there's that generation that could type text really fast on those little keyboards, but it's not like it's actually better for typing any kind of serious sort of article or anything, because you're still using your thumbs. It's not like, you know, the keyboard that comes with the iPad Pro or something where it's all right.
Have you tried going back to a dumb phone from a smartphone? Because I have, when my screen is smashed or whatever, and it's just completely horrific to type on. I can't imagine to have one of those.
I don't really get it. I mean, that's quite often the case. I don't see why people would want a hardware keyboard. I guess that they are thinking that however small the niche is, they might as well get that niche because they're not going to compete with.
That is that's a very good point, actually.
In any sort of product.
And the fact is that a lot of the other manufacturers who are coming out with updates, such as, you know, there are some good phones coming out, the LG G6.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the LG G6 particularly because of the design, which is bezel-free or nearly bezel-free.
Yeah, what they've done is they've tried to make a one-handed phone, if you like, something that's comfortable to use with one hand, but with really big screens. So they've managed to somehow get a 5.7-inch screen into a phone that you can still use with one hand. So they've gone completely away from the modular design of the LG G5, and now they've put an even wider screen on, so it's an 18x9 screen rather than 16x9, and it means that you have a much bigger screen to body ratio.
Does that mean that the existing apps will need to be redesigned for that aspect ratio?
Well, this is the interesting point, because it's giving away giving over more screen to the apps, but yes, the apps will need to know and be aware that they can use that extra bit of screen. I think right now we're not quite sure what works and what doesn't. If you try and watch a video, for example, you'll just get black bars down the left and right hand sides, so you're not actually seeing the extra screen there, you're just not using it.
I suppose it's a bit like when the iPhone 5 launched, and while we were waiting for the apps to be updated, you always got black bars. We have to move on because there's so many things to talk about. What about on the tablet side of things?
So Samsung has launched some new tablets. We haven't heard much from Samsung in terms of tablets for a long time. So they've launched the new Tab S3, which is an Android tablet. I mean, it's a nice tablet, but we've seen that kind of Android tablet before. The more interesting one is the new Galaxy Book, which Samsung is now competing with Microsoft on the Surface Pro, and it runs Windows 10. So Samsung stopped manufacturing Windows laptops quite a while ago, and you could say that they're back because they've got a Windows laptop. So it comes with a keyboard case, so you can use your Windows tablet just like a Surface Pro. You can use that keyboard and start typing away, and it's got a touchpad on it. It comes in two sizes, so there's a 10-inch and a 12-inch, which means, again, quite similar to Microsoft's range, because they've got the smaller 10-inch Surface as well. Mm-hmm. So it does seem, I mean, there are other manufacturers like Lenovo and others who are making these Windows 10 tablets with keyboards, so it's by no means the only competitor to the Surface Pro. And of course, Microsoft is heavily rumoured to be launching the Surface Pro 5 really soon, so it's going to be a lot of stuff going on in terms of Windows 2-in-1s.
Yeah, well, they're going for the mobile business market, presumably. I sort of wanted to throw it over to you guys on the business side. Do you find that people are willing to use tablets as work devices on the go? Is that something that's made it into the enterprise, as we call it?
Well, I mean, I think you're seeing a lot. You're seeing it a lot more in retail. Like staff are being given tablets to use all the time. Yeah, I think so. I mean, why not?
And that's what I mean. I remember Apple had a big thing about the iPad Pro,
uh-huh.
about how it was going to be the next big business tool. And I don't think that's happened. Mm. I think it's still just this little niche of people that need to, you know, draw pictures on the go rather than really working in the sort of boring sense.
I think it probably depends on the business, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I know MWC this year, SAP have elaborated a little bit on their partnership with Apple. They're releasing a software developer kit specifically for developing apps on the enterprise on SAP HANA. So, you know, there's clearly some interest there. Mm-hmm. I suppose a couple of, well, probably 5 or 6 years ago now, we had the whole bring your own device trend where, you know, the whole point was bringing tablets to work and making that secure in the
right.
in the enterprise setting. So, it just depends on the business, really, I think.
Yeah. We should talk about VR, and this is going right away from business, but Jim is looking at me, we're running out of time. Quickly then, there's a new... I'm going to put words in your mouth. There's a new Steam VR headset that's been announced at MWC, which we're getting very excited about. How about we talk about 5G last of all, which everybody's been talking about. Is there any actual concrete reality to this now?
In some senses, there are. I mean, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes to make sure that this tech is kind of actually it can actually work. But I don't think we're going to actually see any phones with 5G or the infrastructure support until about 2020. So you've got another 3 years really to wait before you can have a 5G phone. The benefit, of course, will be that it will go a lot faster than 4G. If you think 4G is fast now, and it is when you get a really good signal, then you know you could.
I sort
be,
of think 4G is fast.
It is fast. 5G is going to blow your mind.
But then that's what they said about 4G after I had 3G.
I think this is the problem, that they're claiming 1 gigabit per second. Now, that would burn through my data in probably half a second or something.
Aren't they saying 10 gigabits? I know they say up to, so
I mean,
probably won't.
Maybe it is 10 gigabits. The point is, the real world speeds are going to be a lot faster than 4G.
Mm.
But whether you'll actually see that anywhere outside of central London, Birmingham, Manchester, those kind of places.
Will the carriers be prepared for it? Because I know that, I think, if I remember correctly, they're kind of struggling to deal with the amount of traffic on 4G networks as it is.
That is a good question as well. I think that the infrastructure rollout for this is going to take even longer. Mm-hmm. So while technically your Samsung or your Apple phone may support 5G, it's not going to be for a number of years after that we'll maybe see the very full speed that's available with it as they knock off 2G and possibly 3G.
I think it's going to be one of those things where emerging economies get it quicker because there's less infrastructure to replace almost.
It could well happen. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to wait and see, really.
Yeah. Okay, well, last word on it then. We've been talking about phones, and the like the headline grabber has been this 17-year-old retro phone. Is there a point in having an event like Mobile World Congress when all the new phones are all basically the same, and the only one we're actually talking about is this ancient one? Are phones different enough to justify this sort of event now, Jim?
I think there's always going to be an appetite for the next phone with a slightly better camera, a slightly faster yeah. processor, but we are only talking about incremental updates. There's nothing revolutionary, is there? I mean, even the LG G6, even the new Samsung S8, which wasn't launched at MWC, that what is there to really get excited about? There's nothing revolutionary, is there?
Yeah. Well, VR is the next thing.
They say.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't have more time to talk about VR, but that's still a niche product. Smartphones have become commoditized and are too mainstream, and VR is too niche, and we're at a difficult point at the moment, and people are giving up on tablets. That's a bit of a downer, so let's get around the room with an exciting question. And the question is, Mobile World Congress or Mobile World Congress? No. Tom McCauley.
Okay, Mobile World Congress, because it rhymes so well.
What? But don't base it on that. Base it on the truth in your heart.
Okay. Mobile World Congress. Yes. It's Barcelona.
Still, okay. Yeah. All right. Tamla McGee.
Mobile World Congress. Yes.
And Jim Martin.
A Mobile World Congress. Yes.
I'm impressed. I thought, all right, brilliant. Well, let's have a little break then. And in a minute, we'll be talking about the government.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tom McCauley. Some people might be surprised to find that the UK government has a digital strategy. But they've not been only having one, but talking about it this week. Can you fill us in?
They have, yeah. And be right to be surprised because it's been delayed for more than a year now. But similarly to the government transformation strategy that was published 2 weeks ago. But yeah, they launched it yesterday in a converted biscuit factory in Bermondsey in London.
That seems apt somehow.
Yeah. Digital transformation, full effect. But it's, Culture Secretary Karen Bradley MP launched it, and it's split into seven separate strands, which cover connectivity, skills, digital businesses, data, digital government, cyberspace, and the wider economy.
And which of those is the most important, you think?
Well, the one that the report puts most emphasis on is digital skills, and their sort of ultimate solution to addressing the digital skills gap is basically industry involvement. They're trying to bring the private sector on board to provide training. They promised more than 4 million free digital skills training opportunities across the nation. Schemes such as Google pledging to boost seaside town digital skills.
Barclays specifically seaside town.
Yeah. I guess they want a nice break. But
lovely.
Yeah, Lloyds Banking Group providing digital skills training to 2.5 million people. Barclays teaching coding to 45,000 children. It's got sort of mixed feedback, I'd say, the report.
Well, I guess, and in my immediate response to this is that Brexit is hanging heavy over all of this.
Absolutely, it's kind of the elephant in the room. They don't really discuss it at great length, and I think that's something that's been criticised in the feedback I've seen. But Karen Bradley promised to secure the residential status of the current EU nationals in the UK, but didn't really go into details of how she'd do that. And I think
does she have the powers to influence that?
No, I don't believe she does. I mean, she's sort of reiterating what the government said without really giving any kind of clear indication of how that will take place. But a lot of people are concerned about a potential Brexit brain drain. That seems to be one of the main criticisms.
Yeah, it's going to present problems for research and academia.
Yeah.
Didn't Liam Fox just the other day say something along the lines of IT contractors the government employs must be pro-Brexit and have a certain Brexity kind of culture.
Brexity?
Yeah, well, you didn't
You're
say Brexity.
You're quite Brexity, aren't you, Tamla?
Yes, I'm incredibly Brexity, David. But you'd think if there's all this scare about brain drain, specifically saying you must be pro-Brexit to companies that you're hiring is kind of counter-effective.
Yeah, it does sound it, definitely. I don't know, that's not something that she went into any depth about, probably with good reason, surprisingly. But I think, the main thing was the skills that they're providing. But it was, again, one of those sorts of documents, another strategy, but what does it really mean in practice? And that's still...
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Well, it's quite unclear.
But the intentions are good, do you think? The concepts are sound?
I don't think they have malicious intentions, but it's really...
something, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure this will come to a big surprise, especially to my esteemed colleague... Tamlin, that they're basically they're basically asking the private sector to do a lot of the work.
Well, that might not be the worst idea, I suppose, considering the power that they have to affect change in a positive way. We've mentioned 5G already, so let's sort of skirt over this fairly briefly. But they want to tell me if I got this wrong. They want to expand the coverage of 4G. And I suppose the big question is, why are you bothering with 5G when 4G is still unavailable to so much of the country?
Yeah,
well, even Wi-Fi, good Wi-Fi is unavailable to a lot of the country as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're addressing that, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they actually spoke more. I haven't gone through the entire document because it's enormous, but they discussed specifically a £1 billion investment in next-generation digital connectivity, which would include full fibre and 5G. But obviously, it's particularly in rural areas, they're still struggling to get a kind of good reception with what they've got, so... We'll see how that works in practice.
Do we know where the £1 billion is going to come from?
No, it was again. I think it was something that they repeated from the autumn statement.
Okay.
So it wasn't a new promise, from what I understand. But
it's a suspiciously round number, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, perfect.
How much are you going to spend on it?
Yeah.
£1 billion. Okay. I'm hearing a lot about social issues as well on this sort of topic about how it can. Be influenced by technology, and this goes back to what you were saying about malicious intent. Do you think that they can use technology to create opportunities for poorer people in this country, for example?
More Uber drivers.
yeah. I'm sort of thinking as the idea of technology as an equaliser, as a way of bringing people that wouldn't traditionally have the opportunities.
Sure.
The 21st century, you know.
That is something they discuss mostly on a regional level. They also talk about diversity, particularly getting more women involved in the industry. And there are some schemes that are already in place trying to do that. But that's what they said was a principal driving factor behind what they call the Digital Skills Partnership, effectively getting private sector involvement in providing training, because they say that that's going to allow them to use their regional expertise to focus on specific issues in those areas of the country.
Yeah. Safe and secure cyberspace? Is that something that the government can control?
Yeah, cybersecurity is another thing they touched on. They talk about particularly bringing in more robust parental controls for internet use. But
what does that mean?
In practice, can't say, personally. I haven't seen anything specific in the document myself. That's not to say that it isn't there, because I haven't read the whole thing. But it's something that Karen Brady touched upon during the launch.
Yeah. Making the government more digital, that seems like... a lot of this reminds me of... we managed not to mention him so far this week, but it reminds me of Trump. Just they're using the word digital the way he uses the word cyber.
Yeah, yeah.
The government's already fairly digital, isn't it?
I think we did pretty well by sort of international rankings. I think it's a UN survey that... places the UK number one in the world for digital government.
Yeah.
That's at least what they claimed at this launch event, but probably worth checking.
But then presumably that also opens it up to the dangers of being hacked.
Yes.
Which is likely to happen, given their understanding of technology. Do you think politicians should get involved in technology in this way? Or I mean, are they even involved? Is this just hot air?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't imagine. I mean, I could be entirely wrong. I can't see Karen Bradley being a cybersecurity expert, but she's seems committed to the idea of it.
It is interesting. You got a bit of it from Osborne and his sort of financial statements and that. But I think specifically since Theresa May took over, they seem to be really trying to. Present themselves as pro-technology and really advanced in that regard. I know Philip Hammond's recently opened the National Cybersecurity Centre and committed, I think, $2 billion to that as well. And was peacocking about our abilities to hack ISIS, whatever that means.
Peacocking, I like that.
Yes. But I think it's interesting that we're seeing so much like positive noise about technology from the government over the last year or two. Yeah, rather.
You remember what Corbyn said about that completely incomprehensible statement about cyber-physical factory.
I thought that was very good. He was the only one talking about automation and the fact that...
Big data.
Yeah, yeah. And open source learning and education and stuff like that.
And those are three topics that I haven't been touched on upon at all from what I've seen of the strategy.
Deregulation was a big thing.
Yeah, they did mention that. They're going to try and make innovation... friendly regulation, but they don't, from what I've seen, again, I can't say I've read the entire document, there isn't that much on the specifics of that, but I think it's obviously going to be peeling back the regulation.
Yeah, they're going to transform this country into the kind of place that welcomes Peter Thiel sort of colliding into hospitals on a drone and harvesting organs, probably for the Silicon Valley chance.
Yeah, that's the example she gave, yeah.
Was it really?
Well, the difficulty that we have now is persuading any new company to come here, any large company to come here. Since the Brexit referendum result.
Well, what's funny about that is when Arm got bought by SoftBank, and that was lauded as a very positive move for British technology. It's like, hang on, the biggest British technology success story, if you're buying into that whole narrative, has just been bought by a Japanese conglomerate. Yeah. Like, what is going on there?
Like the immediate vulnerability of British companies following that decision.
Yeah, completely contradictory.
We should probably draw a veil over this. let's go around the room. The question is... strategy, or I don't think much of that-a-gy. You like that, Tandem? You normally laugh at my question. You didn't like that one. Jim, you go first.
I don't think much of that-a-gy.
It's good, isn't it? Tom?
I don't think much of that-a-gy.
And Tandem?
I do not think... what's
it? I don't think much of that-a-gy. It's not that difficult. Good. So all positive for the first one, all negative for this one. We'll have another break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about robots.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tandy McGee, I am a robot. Not really, of course, just a joke. But what's all this you've been telling me about killer robots?
Well, not necessarily killer robots, but a security vendor called IOActive has been testing consumer... home, business and industrial robotics for security vulnerabilities and found that most of them are shipping out the factory with incredibly insecure software or weak to zero encryption or authentication issues and so on, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you think about the fact that most of these robots are connected to a wider network or have cameras on them or microphones or can literally be moved around, it poses quite a dystopian, weird scenario. Do you know what I mean?
All right, so let's get back to the simple. You're using all your powder up in the first minute. are we talking? First of all, are we talking? What kind of robots are we talking about? Are we talking about the fun ones you buy in the home?
Yeah.
Or are we talking about industrial robots? Are we talking about all robots?
Well, they tested robots from vendors including SoftBank, UbiTech, Robotis, Universal Robots, Rethink Robotics, and Azratech, which is. It covers all those three things, so home, business, and industry as well.
Okay. And I've just discovered a stat, which is that there's like 1.8 million industrial robots in the world, and there's going to be another 1.4 million by 2019. So potentially, any of these robots could be hacked?
Well, it's like with any kind of nascent technology, vendors who are creating it are so keen to... get people to buy them, they tend to ship them without security considerations in mind. We saw that with the wave of the first IoT devices, Internet of Things devices, whereby, you know, it was all about getting the devices out there, but they didn't necessarily have security baked in. But in terms of robotics, IDC reported that the market will be worth $188 billion by 2020. So it's not just this kind of crazy hypothetical scenario. We are going to see some kind of robotics in our homes, in our businesses, places of work, and in factories as well. So the fact that they're vulnerable is a real problem.
It feels like robots have been around for quite a long time. I know that we're sort of on the hockey stick of the graph, but there have been robots in factories since the 80s or something.
Absolutely, yeah.
Why has it only come to this point that we're starting to think about security?
Well, I was talking to the CTO from IOActive, and he was just as surprised as I was. The fact that, you know, industrial robots have been around for a long time, but hardly anyone's talking about security in them at all. And they haven't been, really.
They don't need passwords? Or can you put a password if people are just leaving the default?
Yeah, some of them ship without any passwords, or have very weak passwords, or it's very difficult to change the passwords on them. There's parallels there with something called the Mirai botnet. You might have heard about that, whereby it's kind of self-replicating Internet of Things botnet, and hackers basically develop code that would brute force access into these insecure devices using very simple passwords or variations of passwords, and created a very powerful, like, record-breaking botnet. So you have to wonder that if all these machines are going to be everywhere and they're shipping without passwords, like, it just seems crazy.
Yeah, it seems a bit more dangerous, doesn't it, with robots, especially if they can move around or they have lasers on them or something like that.
Cutting tools.
The US Department of Labor keeps a list of people maimed or killed by robots. It's not that long, but there is 2 pages to it. And these things are going to... I don't want to sound scaremongery or anything, but these things are going to be more powerful and sophisticated to the degree where you might be able to manipulate them to cause physical harm to people.
You can't really do that with a thermostat in your house or a smart light bulb, can you? So it's a bit different.
No, although the Internet of Things stuff, I think, is vulnerable to hacking. Maybe not in this sort of killing people sense, but it could certainly withhold data or broadcast data.
I think probably the more realistic scenario is, rather than robots turning on their human masters in factories, is that they could be used for industrial sabotage or espionage, because a lot of the ones in factories ship with, again, like, cameras and microphones on them. You just need to get access to one of those in a fab or any kind of factory, and you can broadcast what you're viewing to the attacker.
Has anybody around this table got a robot?
No.
I've only got a kind of a kid's toy robot, which you can control with your phone over Bluetooth.
It's not Cloud Pets, is it?
It's not Cloud Pets, no. No, it isn't. Yeah, it's the Jimdo. No, what is it?
Is that your name?
That's Jimdo.
It's called Jimbo or something.
I see. And would any of you be willing to get a robot now that you've heard this? Would this influence your life?
I don't really know what purpose a robot would serve in my life.
it could do your bidding.
I've seen a few, probably similar to what you have, Tamlin, and the companies like to say that they're also home robots. Primarily, they are these kind of ones that can move around. They could be used in businesses for, maybe, you know, you could have one as a waiting robot, so it would rock up to your table and it would display a menu on the thing, and you'd tap what you want, and then it would play some music or whatever and go away. But having one of those
sounds really annoying.
Having one of those in the house, unless it was properly sophisticated and it could actually do the chores, what purpose does it serve? The only one I can really think of is where it's company for the elderly. If you've got an elderly relative who is at home alone, then they might be able to, you know, with all the AI that's coming along as well, it could, in theory, talk to them and be their company.
That's something in Japan I know that they've sort of put a lot of money into.
Yeah.
But yeah, caring for the elderly.
Yeah.
There's something really sad about that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Tragic, really.
Well, it's sad, but it's sort of pragmatic, isn't it?
Mm.
Is it, would you rather have a sort of dystopian robot carer or no company?
I know we're not supposed to be talking about AI, but Facebook just announced in February that they're going to be using a lot more AI to look at posts on Facebook, and specifically, this was the one I saw, that they would look at posts just to see if anyone had any suicidal thoughts and were saying, you know, I'm so sad, I'm going to end it all. And rather than rely on human users to flag up those posts to Facebook's team, the AI will now automatically flag up those posts for the review team, and then somebody will get in touch with those users.
It's quite intrusive in a way, isn't it?
which is pretty intrusive.
I don't know how I feel about that.
But as ever, you've got that balance between kind of convenience and an invasion of privacy. Would you rather that nobody was monitoring your posts and you wouldn't get the support that perhaps you need, or the other way around?
I think
I tweeted about this, and someone replied to me that they're absolutely sick of getting the Samaritan's number from Google when they did searches for mental health problems. And I think being proactively reached out to by some Facebook automaton about how depressed you are would probably depress me further and convince me to go ahead with it.
So policing your emotions as well.
It's always an interesting, worrying time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, Tamlin, that robots should be programmed ethically? Should they be aware of the of the rights and the wrongs?
Well, like the Asimov.
Well, exactly. Exactly.
Yes, probably.
are they at the moment? I mean, does a robot... This is going to sound silly, but does a robot know it's wrong to kill a person?
You've got the laws, haven't you? The three...
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the guy who came up with the laws.
Asimov.
Yeah. It was Asimov, was it? So the first law is that, it can't cause any harm to a person until I think...
You know, this report.
So they're all built with that.
Are they actually built with that now?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it? Because if they're not even built with passwords, maybe they haven't bothered to put the laws in either.
The context of this report, it highlighted a bunch of cases where robots had turned on humans, and there was a case in 2007 with the South African National Defence Force where an automated weapon slaughtered 9 soldiers during testing and maimed another 14 or so. So they don't seem to be doing very well on that first law,
no.
To be honest. But, you know, it was designed to kill. It just killed the wrong people, I guess.
Yeah.
Or did it?
Yeah.
Sorry?
Or did it?
Or did it, yeah. Maybe it knew something we didn't.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is getting a bit bleak. So
it usually happens when I'm on this podcast for some reason.
It always does. Let's go around the room one last time. iRobot or Nay Robot?
You could have said Nobot.
What?
Nobot.
Oh, that is good, actually.
Let's do that instead.
Let's pretend I didn't say that one. Robot or Nobot? Jim Martin.
Nobot.
Tom McCauley.
Nobot.
And Tammy McGee.
Robot.
Good man. I say robot too. I love robots. And that is the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. Feel free to get in touch and let us know your thoughts and opinions. You can tweet us using the handle at UK Tech Podcast, or you can email us on editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed opinion on the hottest topics in tech, which you can find on Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud, and those sort of places. And don't forget to subscribe, comment, and tell your friends. Until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.